This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah, alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah wa ba'd. My brothers and sisters, friends, Romans, countrymen. We were having this discussion this morning. My long-suffering friend and trusted right hand, Muhammad Azharuddin, and myself, about the importance of quality. And as he knows, and I am quite unashamedly happy to admit, I believe that quality is a competitive advantage. And quality can be achieved only by having a totally non-compromising attitude about the lack of it. The moment you compromise on lack of quality, and usually it is done in the name of so-called kindness, the whole house of cards collapses. I have a quote. I say metrics convert intentions into goals, desires into results. Metrics, which is measurement, convert intentions into goals, desires into results. So I thought, let me talk to you about this whole issue of this confusion really about kindness. Obviously, in my defense, I must put a disclaimer to say that I have nothing against kindness. I think kindness is one of the values that seems to be disappearing from our society at great cost to us. So kindness is extremely important. The important thing is to understand what is kindness. Now, what is kindness? Is it accepting substandard work, or is it insisting that only the best quality is acceptable? What is kindness? There's often a lot of confusion about this, and people think that they are being kind when they say nothing to their group members or their family or friends who routinely over-promise and under-deliver. I want to distinguish here between inability and unwillingness. Inability, not capable, and unwillingness, or don't care. If someone is learning English, for example, I wouldn't discard something he had written because it had spelling or grammatical errors. But if the same work comes from someone who knows English well, then that indicates an attitude of carelessness and inattention to quality, which is a reflection not of their language ability, but of a much more dangerous malaise of an attitude of lack of attention to detail and a lack of concern for quality. When I see this, I know I am looking at a person without self-respect, because in my book, my work is my signature. So if I'm not concerned about putting out sloppy work, then it means I'm not concerned about my own image. It's not about projecting an image, but about becoming complacent and comfortable with poor quality. Such a person, in my opinion, is not someone who I would want on my team, no matter what their qualifications are. And so usually if I'm hiring and I find a CV or a covering letter which is full of mistakes, grammatical mistakes and spelling mistakes, I usually don't take it further. I very respectfully place that into my waste bin. In my book called Hiring Winners, which is on Amazon, by all means, please read it. I have argued and shown that technical competence can be hired or trained, but attitude must be selected and hired. Technical competence can be hired or trained, but attitude must be selected and hired. It's almost impossible to change the attitude of people once they are hired. I say almost impossible because it is possible in exceptional cases with exceptional leaders and in exceptional circumstances. It's not something that I would recommend to anyone, and it's not something that I have seen happen that many times in my life. much simpler and easier to hire people with the right attitude and train them in the skills that you want. Just to give you an idea why I call this dangerous, let me share some statistical data with you. According to a 2006 study looking at the frequency of surgical errors in the United States, each year there could be as many as 2,700 mistakes where a surgery is performed on the wrong body part or the wrong patient. That's about 7 per day. In the text that will come with this article, the text will come with this video, I have given the link of the of the study. Please read it. To understand this properly, imagine having your good kidney or your good eye removed. Both have happened. The Federal Aviation Administration lists pilot error as the leading cause of plane accidents. But pilot error is almost always part of a chain of events that starts with something like an iced up wing, a piece of equipment that fails and wasn't reported, or a close encounter on a runway. Again, there is a link in the article. Please read it. These details are only to give you an idea of the seriousness of being careless. It can and does result in loss of life and limb. I'm sure that the more we dig, the more we will find incidents where significant loss could have been avoided if only someone had checked. That is where this is related to spelling and grammar. They are indicators of attitude. Someone who sends out a letter full of spelling and grammatical mistakes, and today it is so easy to check that. You have programs to check that. You have it as you type, the computer does the job for you. Somebody doesn't even bother with that. Then it's more than likely a person, that's the kind of person who will not do an instruments check if they were flying a plane, or read the patient's data sheet, or count the number of sponges they took out of the incision in a surgical procedure. I, for one, wouldn't want to be on that plane or that operating table. This attitude of carelessness is not restricted to English writers or pilots or surgeons. We have careless teachers who ruin children's enthusiasm to study. We have careless parents who bring up little animals instead of responsible human beings. We have careless scholars who leave the remnants of their mistakes to confound people long after they are dead and gone. And that is where the issue of demanding quality comes in. Sloppiness is not a sign of passion, but the lack of it. By and large, we seem to have quality problems in third world countries because we accept poor quality. People can do better, but they need to be convinced that it is worth their while to do so. We must demand quality without apology and without confusing it for a lack of kindness. In my opinion, the willingness to take tough calls is the key to quality. Ask yourself, is it kindness to allow cancer to develop because you don't want to hurt the patient by cutting him? Or is it kindness to be concerned enough about the life of the patient to cut out the cancer? Which is more kind? That is what you are doing when you allow sloppiness in the name of being kind. You cut out cancer because you know that it will kill you, though it is your own cell. That's precisely why your internal defense mechanism cannot deal with it, and you have to use external intervention. That is why Jack Welch of GE used to say that the ultimate test of the leader is if he had edge, which he defined as the ability to take tough decisions. Among the four E's of GE, and those are my GE friends who work for GE or who are consultants with GE, I've been a consultant with GE from 1994. We know this four E's very well. Energy, energize, edge, and execute. Welch would say that a person may have three of the four, but if he did not have edge, then he would fail even though he had the others. There's an excellent article. I've given you the link for that as well. Now, quality is all about being tough for the right reasons. Firstly, with oneself, and then with one's team. Without that edge, there can never be any quality. Of this, I'm absolutely convinced, and I hope I can convince you. Michael Harry of Motorola was the man who conceptualized Six Sigma quality. And it's his famous statement, he said, if you want to see what somebody values, see what they measure. He said, if you want to see what somebody values, see what they measure. And that's the reason why we say time is money, but we don't really mean that, because we measure money, and so when we lose it, even if it's a small amount, it pricks in the heart or the mind. But time, we just waste it. On an average, a person today spends 6 hours a day on the screen of their phone in social media. 6 hours a day. That's almost one third of your life. If time was money, believe me, you would not do that. And that's because we don't measure time. Although money is replaceable and time is irreplaceable. Still, this is how we treat it. So, to go back to Michael Harry of Motorola, he's the man who conceptualized Six Sigma quality, this quality standard, which is based on the principle that one can only measure mistakes. You can't say how efficient someone is except to count the number of mistakes they make. The fewer the mistakes, the better the product or service. So, let's say someone has a service delivery of 99% correct. Now, that may sound perfectly acceptable, and we may say to ourselves, well, you know, we must be compassionate and not give that person a hard time because they make that one mistake in 100. Until, of course, you translate that into Six Sigma terms, how many per million? 1% is 10,000 mistakes per million. 10,000 per million. Six Sigma is 3.4 mistakes per million. 99% correct is 10,000 mistakes per million. Six Sigma quality is 3.4 mistakes per million. Let me ask you, how would you like to fly in a plane at 39,000 feet where the engines were manufactured by a company operating at 99% efficiency? Or where the pilot is operating at 99% efficiency? Or be operated for heart surgery by a surgeon who is 99% particular about hygiene? Do I need to give you more examples? This is where the importance of measurement, the importance of metrics comes in. It is only when you have metrics to define what is meant by acceptable quality in your context can you be sure that everyone understands the standard, can be measured, and will know clearly if he or she met the standard or didn't. What you don't measure, you don't know. What you don't know, you can't control. And what you cannot control, you cannot guarantee. Let me repeat that. What you don't measure, you don't know. What you don't know, you cannot control. And what you cannot control, you cannot guarantee. Subjective assessments cannot substitute for metrics. So do take the time and trouble to measure the quality of whatever it is that you are doing in life. This is what, incidentally, Toyota did with the development of their luxury car. When I was in business school, this is one of the case studies that we did there. Toyota went to the owners of Rolls-Royce, Mercedes, and BMW and other luxury cars like this and asked them questions about what they felt, not thought, what they felt when they used their cars. They asked, for example, the owner of Rolls-Royce, what he or she feels when they get into the car and shut the door and it shuts with a very satisfying thump, not a teeny clang like the door of a small cheap car. They asked them what they felt when they sank into the luxury of real leather seats which hug them and give them back support. They asked the owners of BMW what they felt when they were behind the wheel on an open stretch of road and they floored the accelerator. Those of you who have driven BMWs, and I have driven BMWs, will know what I mean. The car acts like a leopard, gathering itself to pounce, and then boom, it goes. You can feel it in your belly before it leaps forward and the thrust drives you back in your seat. Toyota engineers took these highly touchy-feely answers and converted them into engineering drawings, the most specific of data. The result was the successful and fastest-selling luxury car on the market, the Lexus. This is the magic of numbers, the power of metrics. They convert wishes into reality, vision into action, effort into results. Quality is serious. Lack of quality is deadly. Lack of quality happens simply because we permit it, because we allow it. It happens because we don't insist on quality. It happens because we accept poor quality, most often in the name of being kind and compassionate. We are very foggy in our heads about this. I suggest get rid of this fog, not realizing, of course, that there's nothing more unkind and unjust than accepting poor quality. It fools the provider into believing that his or her product or service is good enough. It takes away their incentive to improve and makes them vulnerable to collapse. This is not kindness, but a lack of understanding of the whole issue of quality, which has very long-term and very destructive effects. This also has a huge negative impact on those team members, on those people in your organization who are quality conscious. You take away their incentive of being quality conscious by accepting poor quality from their colleagues. This is injustice to them, and it is injustice and suicide to yourself. Unfortunately, our society is full of examples of people who don't keep their word, who do not deliver on promises, who do not work to high standards, and give ridiculous excuses when challenged. People who confuse effort with result, while it is only results that count. Let me tell you two stories before I end this chat of mine. The first story goes that Motorola, and this story I heard in Motorola in Chicago. Motorola ordered a part of their, they had a Japanese ancillary which used to make their pagers for them. So they ordered a part for their pagers from their Japanese ancillary and impressed upon them that they were a Six Sigma company and would not accept anything but the Six Sigma standard of 3.4 mistakes per million. When the consignment was delivered, to Motorola's surprise, they found two packages, a big one and a small one. When they opened the big box, they saw that it had the entire consignment of 1 million parts that they had ordered. The small box had four parts in it. When they asked their Japanese partner, they were told, "We didn't understand what you wanted, why you wanted us to give you defective parts. Because you said you wanted 3.4 mistakes per million. We didn't understand why we should give you defective parts. But since you asked for them, we gave you four defective parts. Otherwise, we don't manufacture anything with defects." So the Japanese company was, you know, steps ahead of them. The second story is about Tata Motors. And this was told to me by their general manager in the Tata Motors factory in India. He said that they were plagued with rework. The cost of, and of course, obviously cost of escalations and so on. And so they hired a Japanese consultant from Toyota to help them to solve their quality problem. He said the man entered the factory, walked straight to the end of the manufacturing line, and there he saw there was a huge area marked rework. He said to them, "Remove the sign, eliminate this work area. That is all that you need to do to fix your problem." The man said, "We were shocked." He said, "What do you mean? Just remove all this? What will happen to things which have to be reworked?" He said, "There will be nothing to rework. If you have no rework area, you will have no rework. People will do the right thing the first time." Well, the Tata executives were not convinced, and they reduced the size of the area, but were too frightened to remove the rework area entirely. The results were predictable. My question to you is, if you had a choice, which car would you buy? A Toyota or a Tata? I rest my case. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you like this idea of insisting on quality, especially when you want to be kind, especially for those people who you love and you value. Thank you very much.